Members, we have two bills on the agenda, and then we're going to have a walkthrough of the omnibus bill. Senator Dahl, Senate File 3366.
What's one more amendment, right?
Hey, members, this is the first committee for this bill, and there's a delete all amendment. Senator Skoy moves the delete all. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The A1 is adopted. Senator Dahl, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members. Thanks for this opportunity this morning. I know this is a later entry into the mix, but it's an important bill for not only for Burnsville, but for the state of Minnesota in terms of job creation. Goodrich Corporation is one of the largest employers in Burnsville, and they're looking at expansion plans here. And what we've done with this amendment, the language you have before you, is that it's modeled pretty much word for word after a bill that passed through this committee a couple years ago in favor of Thomson Reuters' expansion program. Just the only thing that's changed is the numbers, so they're specific to Goodrich and their expansion plans. So I brought with me Carl Lynn from from Goodrich and Mayor Kautz from Burnsville to talk a little bit more about what their plans are and how this affects the area. If I could, Mr. Chair, I'll turn it over to Mr. Lynn.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Carl Lynn. I'm the Director of Operations for Goodrich Sensors and Integrated Systems located in Burnsville and Eagan, Minnesota. I'm a lifelong Minnesota resident and taxpayer and understand your dilemma. Thank you for giving us a few minutes of your time to hear our facility expansion opportunities that we are contemplating. We would like to express our gratitude for considering this win-win opportunity during these difficult budgetary times. Goodrich and Sensors and Integrated Systems employs roughly 1,320 people at the facilities in Eagan and Burnsville, Minnesota. Goodrich Sensors and Integrated Systems provides a broad range of systems to the aerospace industry worldwide, including smart probe air data systems, electronic flight bag systems, security and surveillance systems, and microelectronic mechanical systems called MEMS devices for high-performance sensors and actuators. A few of our customers include Lockheed Martin, Boeing, Airbus, Embraer, and Bombardier. United States government is one of our largest customers in the military market, as is NASA in the space market. Our competition is worldwide. Goodrich has approximately 132 manufacturing sites around the world with opportunities beyond their capabilities to pursue for bettering the company. Goodrich Corporation is considering a multi-year expansion of the Goodrich Sensors Integrated Systems facilities in Burnsville, Minnesota. In order to meet customer demands and competitive cost targets, Goodrich Sensors and Integrated Systems is seeking to partner with the state of Minnesota and the city of Burnsville with the objective of lowering the overall costs associated with the potential expansion. The potential project would begin in late 2010 and continue until 2015, with further potential after 2015. Potentially, the business could expand by 167,000 square feet, add 240 new positions, and spend nearly $148 million in real and personal property through 2015, with potential beyond that. The areas of growth are primarily in the high-tech fields. These fields require educations in the microelectronic, sensors, and test areas. However, the needs of all of our 27 product lines will be addressed as we grow. I thank you for your time and consideration. I would be happy to answer any of the questions from the committee.
Senator Dahl, is this the same language that we had for Thomson, Thomson Reuters now? I'm just wondering if there's a reason, and you might not know this, but on line 1.6, the exemption applies to public or privately owned infrastructure.
Okay. Mr. Chair, on that particular issue, I think that first little section there might be a slightly adjusted because there's a parking ramp that's included in this project, and it's not sure who would actually own that parking ramp at this time, whether it be the city or if it would be the Goodrich Corporation. So that was one of the things that was adjusted a little to accommodate for this particular project.
You may, Senator Dahl, take a look at the publicly owned part and see. I don't know why we would refund that sales tax to the owner of the private capital.
Okay. So. Maybe Deed can answer that, Mr. Chair. I think they helped us draft this language.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dahl, could you explain the revised bill and why you made the changes you did from the bill as introduced,
Mr.
which
Chair,
was just recently.
Senator Rest.
So, in particular, the amount and why that was reduced. I mean, is that new estimates? And I guess I also would have a question about the publicly owned and sales tax
Mr. Chair.
We adopted the amendment, but I'd like to understand how and why you changed it.
Senator Rest, Mr. Chair, I turn this over to Mark Loftus from Deed to give some more specifics on that, because they helped do a lot of the drafting of the initial language.
Mr. Chairman and members, Mark Loftus from Deed. On the question of the number change, the first number that we had at $80 million was based on the total project that would also include expenses that would not be eligible for the sales tax exemption or would otherwise be exempt under the manufacturing exemption. So when we work more closely with the company and learn that the $59 million number is the number of the actual amount that would be subject to the sales tax exemption under this bill, we thought it would make more sense to put that exact number in here so that we knew we were talking about the portion that was exempt from sales tax under the proposal.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, your name?
Loftus.
Your name?
Mark Loftus.
Mr. Loftus, so the capital equipment is already exempt or subject
That's
to
correct.
A refund, so you have adjusted that $80 million down to $59 million to exclude what you already would be or the project would already be entitled to
That's correct,
an exemption.
Senator.
But, Mr. Loftus, that really wouldn't be necessary. I mean, the company's total investment is still going to be $80 million? Mr. Lind?
I'm thinking it's probably higher.
But, Mr. Lind, what's the company's total investment?
We've been looking at the Senator, Mr. Chair, we've been looking at the long-term time frame out through 2019. And through 2019, we reached the $80 million point. We've decided to cut this back to 2015, and the number for 2015 is $50 million. If we add the parking garage to it, which looks like it's been added, that brings it to $59 million, and that is a total capital equipment and property.
Senator Rest.
I think that's very helpful to us in knowing what exactly they're asking for. They're already getting the capital equipment part of this facility exemption through the refund, and so it's for all the other expenditures. And I think separating out the what looks like it might be the publicly owned parking lot of $9 million, the $50 million looks more palatable in terms of sales tax.
And Mr. Lind, we don't know yet who's going to own the parking lot.
No.
And if the city or some public authority ends up building the parking ramp, is the company's investment still $59 million?
Chairman, we have not discussed the parking ramp in great detail. We see some potential there for public use also. We do need our own parking ramp. It's in a location that might benefit the city for some public purposes, and they are considering adjoining that. The initial portion of that parking ramp is $8
million. Yeah, we're working on it. I can address that as well.
And Mr. Lind, if the number of jobs you're going to add is 240, and you have 1,320 currently, that would total 1,560. But we have 1,525 in the bill. Is there some reason, or is it Mr. Loftus, is there some reason there's a discrepancy there?
Mr. Chairman, we were operating yesterday off the number of around 1,300, and we were under the assumption it was 225 new as of yesterday. So if it's actually 240, I would suggest probably going up to 1,550 is a more practical number. And Mr. Lind can speak to that.
Mr. Lind, if we went to adding 240 jobs on top of the currently 1,320, does that work?
Mr. Chairman, we are moving into a season where we hire interns and hire our other contractors. If we snap that line at this time, that's fine. We don't want to snap that starting line in the middle on July 1st.
That works? Okay.
Yes.
Madam Mayor, you drove all the way here from Burnsville. This is kind of an exciting project. Let's
Mr.
hear what
Chairman,
the city's involvement
this is about
has been.
What all of us have been working towards, all of you here at the Capitol and those of us on the local level, it is about jobs. So members of the Tax Committee, senators, thank you for the opportunity to address you this morning because this is very important, not only for the city of Burnsville, but for the state of Minnesota. This is about jobs. Mr. Chair and members, what I'm here to ask you to do is to look at the long-term investment into the Treasury with the jobs that are going to be created. They're high-paying jobs, and one of the things that I want to make sure we preserve in this state and in the city of Burnsville is the intellectual capital and the intellectual property, because B.F. Goodrich, Sensor Systems, corporate headquarters, if you don't know that and you need to come down and take a look at this facility in Burnsville, is in Burnsville. I want that intellectual capital preserved in this state. And senators, I hope that you want that too, because they're high-paying jobs. And the capacity that this is going to build is going to add more to the state treasury than to the city of Burnsville. Because on the property tax side, we're not going to be making that much. But for me, it's about jobs for our people. It's about preserving that intellectual capital here in this state. And, senators, one of the things that we have been working very hard on, not just in the city of Burnsville, but in the region with the Itasca Task Force, the Regional Council of Mayors, have been looking at how we preserve and retain jobs here in our state, grow jobs here in our state, and attract companies to come in. Now, if we build that kind of capital here, senators, I know that we can help you grow. We can help you grow the Treasury with job creation. So please, we're not asking for anything new. The precedents have already been set. We're asking you to again look at this very favorably, just as you've looked at the others favorably, and let's grow jobs and retain the ones that we have here. You know, it's harder to keep. We need to work from our strengths. We have them. We have the jobs here. We have the company here. Let's not lose it. Let's make sure we grow it here, and then let's make sure we attract new jobs here. So I thank you for the opportunity to speak before you because I do work very closely with B.F. Goodrich. I have a close relationship with the president and the senior staff and also the people who work there because they're from Burnsville and they're from Minnesota, all around the South Metro and metropolitan region. I hope that you want this intellectual capital preserved in our state. They're high-paying jobs. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Members, the fiscal note on this is actually drafted to the bill, which was an upfront exemption. So those costs are going to move out into the future and should not and won't be incurred in FY11.
So they would have to go through the usual refund application, right?
Correct.
Which is why it puts it out.
Correct.
Which costs them, but nevertheless.
It was drafted as an exemption, and we didn't have $1.48 million to to do that this year. So I asked Senator Dahl if they could draft it similar to the way we did Thompson West at the time, which was a refund, which in effect pushes it out for us.
Like everybody else does.
Like everybody else. Correct. Any questions, members? We have a little work to do on the job number from 1525 to 1560, and then we need to have a discussion about what might be publicly owned infrastructure, because I don't think we want to refund that money back to the company. So.
Mr. Chairman, we are continuing to work with our business constituent in Burnsville, with B.F. Goodrich. Our staff is continuing to work through all of those issues and to see where the public purpose is.
Okay, thank you. Any more other questions, Member Senator Skoy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there's been some reference to Thompson West, and I remember the discussion there. I think they had 2,000 jobs, and their average salary was around $70,000. I heard the mayor mention these are good-paying jobs. Do you know kind of what your average salary would be on these additional jobs that are being added?
Senator, I pulled that up yesterday. Our average pay in that facility is at $63,000.
63?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions, members? Chair Lee is over Senate File 3366 for possible inclusion, as amended, for possible inclusion in the committee's bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Dahl, Mr. Lynn, thank you for coming down. Madam Mayor, thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Moi, Senate File 2229.
Mr. Chair, thank you so much for giving us an opportunity to present Senate File 2229 to the committee. Senate File 2229 is, we're trying to, it's almost technical in nature, but not quite. You may recall that last year we passed legislation, or actually 2 years ago. And this bill is proposing a slight modification to that. The sales tax exemptions on construction materials are currently allowed for developing affordable housing. And what we're proposing in Senate File 2229 is to make some changes that would make the state consistent with treatment under federal law by allowing the nonprofit doing the affordable housing to form an LLC where the nonprofit is the only entity within the LLC. Apparently the IRS currently treats the LLC as a tax-exempt entity, but for state law purposes, the LLC is the one that has the limited liability. The reason we're doing this is that banks and corporations are requiring this structure as a condition of obtaining financing to make the project as risk-free as possible to the nonprofit. So that's what the bill does. I believe, Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer the A1 amendment as an author's amendment. That's a slight technical change to put the language or to put in the right language, apparently.
Senator Moi moves the A1. And Senator Moi, what does it do?
I believe it strikes out the language on line 1.21. Strikes out corporation, which is a wholly owned subsidiary, and it substitutes better language that clarifies better the intent.
So, counsel, is the estimate based on the assumptions in the amendment?
Mr. Chair, yes. If you look at the revenue estimate under the note section, it does say that the analysis was conducted assuming that it refers to a limited liability company, and also that it's a sole member, so that this amendment would reflect that change.
So the LLC couldn't have other businesses associated with it?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
So, Senator Moi, all this bill really is the exempt organization is still a nonprofit, but they just happen to be an LLC.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
And does it really score this much money? I mean, are that many LLC nonprofits?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Angela Christie, as well as Chris Detling from Project for Pride and Living, could come up and answer some of these detailed questions in terms of the practice.
Where's the department?
I have a question.
Let's just hear from the department.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I from the department also, I would like to know when they did the original revenue estimate, did they specifically exclude those entities in their revenue estimate? I mean, did they do that consciously, or what did the original revenue estimate look like, and what and how was it described with regard to these entities?
Ms. Canoon, any recollection of that? It was just a couple of years ago, I believe, we did that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, for the revenue estimate, if I could first explain the current revenue estimate, we did meet with the industry, some industry representatives yesterday, our research analysts did, and based on the new information they gave us, I know they are at this point revising this revenue estimate. It will be revised downwards, I think fairly substantially, so it's still going to show a revenue cost, but not as large as you're now seeing it. And so hopefully that will help it move forward, I guess, with a lower revenue cost. And regarding the original revenue estimate, I'm sorry, I don't know that information, Senator Rest.
And Senator the only reason I bring that up is if they made that assumption in that all the entities, regardless of their business structure, had been included, and then they decided to not that somehow when it actually went into effect, it was not included, then I have a problem with having any revenue impact if this just if Senator Moore's bill is just a clarification of for the benefit of the department of what the original intent of the legislation was, and we would assume was the original revenue estimate. And if it's going down significantly, I mean, I want to know how significant is significant, because it should get close to zero, in my opinion.
Is getting closer to zero than to 420?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I don't want to promise anything on a revenue estimate until I see it, so I don't know what the actual number is, other than they told me it would be brought down. To your point regarding what the legislation was fairly specific that they were allowed to do this for a nonprofit as well as if they were a limited liability partnership. And so my understanding is there's a pool of housing credits that can be used by the state that's given by at the federal level. So you have a limited number of dollars kind of available for these low-income housing for the tax credits. And so to assume the assumption is that these projects are going to be moved forward, they'd still be either a limited liability partnership, you know, nonprofit doing it, or a for-profit doing it. By allowing now a limited liability corporation to also be able to get the exemption for sales tax purposes, my understanding then for the revenue estimate, then it would assume that these projects are going to move forward. Some of them would not have been had that tax-exempt status for the sales tax purposes. So that's why you'd be still showing a small revenue cost to the state. And I think the advocates who we met with can maybe speak to this a little clearer if I'm still not as quite as clear as I should be on the impact.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, but maybe this is technically an extension there, but I could certainly understand how in Clause 4 they would have assumed that they were eligible for this and without having to add them, the LLCs, specifically. Anyway, I'm still interested in seeing what the original...
Smaller is better.
Smaller is better in what the original revenue estimate was. In what, 2008? Was that when this was passed?
I believe so, yep. Senator Moore, anything further?
That's it, Mr. Chair.
Charlie is over at Senate File 2229 as amended.
Thank you.
Members, we now have where our minority members are, but I was hoping they'd be here for the walkthrough. Senator Skoy moves the A1 amendment to Senate File 3327. That gets the vehicle that the House is working on, puts this in shape with, so that it matches up with them. And then we'll have council walk through the delete all amendment. On the A1 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. The A1 is adopted. Council? And members, much of this is, there's 149 pages here, but the overwhelming part of it is the two department bills that we actually walked through earlier, the technical and the policy bill. So I suggested to council that on the department articles, just tell us what's different. There were really only two real controversial issues, I think the manufactured housing piece and the assessor piece. Council?
Mr. Chair, starting with Article 1, Sections 1 and 2, 3, and 4 are all department provisions. And Sections 5, 6, 7, 8 are also department provisions.
Is that county,
Section 9 is also from the department bill, and then Sections 10 and 11 is a department provision deleting obsolete language. Section 12, which starts on page 16, is the first substantive provision. That's from a Senator Skoy bill that was heard last year and included in the Senate bill regarding single member limited liability companies, and so that LLCs will have similar treatment as partnerships and S corporations. And then sections 13 through 17 are also from the department bill, and those are all cross reference changes. Section 18 is again from that same Senator Skoy bill, and this relates to the gain on sale of a single member LLC, and where it's disregarded for federal income tax purposes, it's treated the same. It's treated for Minnesota purposes as if the sole owner will be individually taxed. Section 19 relates to real estate investment trusts, and you'll note on page 28 that the change there is where the dividends do not meet the federal definition, they will no longer be considered as meeting the Minnesota definition. And we have seen this provision in various bills. For section 20, there's actually two parts to that. One change is from the department bill. And then the second change is another part of the Senator Skoy bill having to do with the CITES rules for estate tax. And then Section 21 is relating to the estate tax for decedents dying in 2010. Currently, federal law blinks off so that there is no estate tax in 2010. And this just clarifies that the Minnesota estate tax will continue, and that should the federal government act and put the generation skipping tax back into effect, that this would become effective when that provision becomes effective. And that is Article 1, Mr. Chair.
Questions, members? Council?
Mr. Chair, Article 2, Section 1 is a department provision that provides a timeline relating to claiming refunds on behalf of purchasers. Section 2 exempts ringtones from sales and use tax, and this is to conform with the streamlined sales tax agreement. Sections 3, 4, and eventually 8 deal with motor vehicle repair, paint, and supplies. That's the bill that we heard in committee 2 weeks ago. And that was changed to have the same intent, but to make it a little bit more clear after talking with the department as to what supplies would be included. So you'll notice in Section 4, those are defined. And there was also an addition at the end of Section 3 that this exemption and the imposition of tax at retail will not apply to an auto auction facility. Those are really the only changes to the bill as we heard in committee. Section 5 is the department bill relating to the change in the sales tax as a result of the constitutional amendment. Section 6 is also from the department bill, requiring substantiation within 20 days. Section 7 is from the department bill, and Section 8 is the other part of the motor vehicle repair paint. Section 9 starts the public safety radio exemption. And this is essentially the amendment that was added to Senator Rosen's bill so that it would be retroactive and local governments who had made these purchases starting back on July 1, 2006 could apply for a refund. And then going forward, it would be all parts of the state would be exempt. Section 10 is from the department bill. It's replacing the nonprofit requirement that was inadvertently dropped out of law. Section 11 is actually the bill we just heard, Senator Moore's bill, relating to low-income housing, and it does incorporate the amendment that was added by the committee. Sections 12, 13, and 14 are cross-references that are necessary for the public safety radio exemption so that those individuals can get the refund, the local governments can get a refund. Sections 15 and 16 are from the department bill, and that relates to seller and purchaser relief from liability and also specifically to keeping the state in conformity with the streamlined sales tax agreement. Section 17 is from the department bill and requires that local taxes that the department is going to administer must use the definitions in Chapter 297A. Sections 18 and 19 relate to the city of Proctor's current local option sales tax, and what's being done there is it's taking away the limit of what can be spent on their current uses, and then Section 19 is giving them additional bonding authority. Section 20 is relating to the Rochester's lodging tax, and this was Senator Lynch's bill that we heard in committee with no changes. Sections 21, 22, and 23 relate to the city of Owatonna's local option sales tax, and that's slightly different than what we heard in committee. We two uses have been taken out, specifically the local cost of public safety radio and also the cost for the study. So those uses have been taken out, and then the bonding authority has been reduced to account for those changes. So that's sections 21, 22, and 23. And then section 24 is a department provision, just to clarify that the motor vehicle tax is related to the lease and rentals, not the registration date. Section 25 is the rest of the Rochester bill that we heard in committee. Section 26 is the Cloquet local option sales tax, and that's slightly different in that there was a removal of the use relating to library and public safety operation costs. Section 27 on page 54 is Senator Langseth's bill relating to the city of Detroit Lakes, and the one change there was the removal of the entertainment tax, which was discussed in committee. Section 28 is the city of Ely's tax. The changes there are to reduce it to 0.5%. It was 1% in the bill as introduced. And then the uses were changed to conform to the testimony that was given at committee. These are the specific projects they actually intend to use it for. And then the bonding authority was reduced to reflect the actual amount of those projects. Section 29 is the Giant Ridge Recreation Area Taxing Authority for a variety of local taxes, and we took out the exemption for residents that was at issue in committee. Section 30 on page 58 is the city of Hutchinson, and that's essentially as it was in committee. Section 31 is the city of Marshall sales tax, and what was removed in those provisions are the requirement that the food and beverage taxes would be subject to referendum, since traditionally that has not been the case. And then to the uses for the food and beverage tax, there was added promotion and marketing, as was discussed by the committee. And that is Article 2, Mr. Chair.
Questions, members? Article 3.
Mr. Chair, Article 3 is special taxes, and it is all department provisions, so I'm not sure if you want me to go through those. Well, then.
Mr. Chairman, members, Article 4 is the property taxes and aids provisions in the bill. And again, I will go very briefly over those that were discussed in the two department bills. Sections 1, 4, 13, and 14 are the provisions that dealt with the activities of appraisers and assessors in the taxing jurisdictions. And these four sections are exactly the same as are in a separate bill of Senator Phoebe's. Section 2 is a department provision. Section 3 is the amendment to the process for the calculation of the air flight property tax. Under current law, if a levy amount has not been certified by September 1st by the Commissioner of Transportation, the Commissioner of Revenue would use last year's levy. This section would require the Commissioner of Transportation to certify that levy, and it's actually by December 31st of the year, as it was changed in the committee. Sections 5 and 6 are taken from the department bills. Section 7 was a bill of Senator Saxhoggs that was before the committee that extends from 2011 to 2016 the termination of a property tax exemption for a business incubator property in Itasca or Aiken County. Section 8 is a provision that was in last year's Senate tax bill that would modify the property tax exemption that applies to leased seasonal recreational property so that there would no longer be a county board requirement and the requirement that a particular parcel had been exempt from taxation for property taxes payable in 2008 is no longer included in that qualification. Sections 9, 10, 11, and 12 were included in the department's bills. 13 and 14 were parts of the assessor qualification provisions. Section 15 is a bill of Senator Erickson Ropes that would provide for the continuation of no longer qualifying property under the Green Acres treatment. Current law would allow the continuation of the Green Acres treatment for land that would no longer be considered as qualifying for Green Acres treatment if it is transferred to a son or daughter. This would extend the same treatment to land that is transferred from a family farm limited liability company that has terminated to the son or the daughter of the individual who owned that company. Section 16 is a new provision that had been discussed by the committee and in the Property Tax Division with respect to the method for valuing Green Acres property. This would require the Commissioner of Revenue to consult with the Department of Applied Economics at the University of Minnesota to develop a method for determining the agriculture production value of land enrolled in Green Acres for each county. And then those values will be used in the mix with sales data and other regional data for production prices and expenses. And that'll help to arrive at a more targeted valuation for the Green Acres property. Sections 17 and 18 are from the department bills. Section 19 is one of the provisions that deals with the manufactured home cooperative property that had started as a piece of the department bill, but then was included in a bill of Senator Dibbles that was heard by the committee recently. And under these sections, the property that is owned, manufactured home park property that's owned by a cooperative or association, will receive a lower class rate as specified in Section 23. But the market, the value of each of the lots will not be subject to the market value credit, and the taxes paid on the lot will not be eligible for the property tax refund. Section 20 was a bill of Senator Stumpf's that allowed for the continuation of homestead treatment for ag property that was located in Marshall County if the owner of the property had to vacate because of the floods. Section 21 is a modified version of a bill of Senator Bach's that dealt with the homestead resort property, where the owner of the homestead resort moved to a second property and began to use that as the homestead resort. In this case, both of those properties will be aggregated and subject to the classification that applies to Class 1C property. But this provision has been clarified so that either one of the properties would have to qualify for treatment as 1C property separately in order to qualify for this aggregating. Section 22 is a bill of Senator Vanderveer's that expands the modifies the qualification for inclusion of property that's used for boarding horses within the agricultural classification. There are three provisions in Section 23. One is the reduction in the class rate that applies to the manufactured home park cooperatives. That property would qualify for a 75% of market value class rate if more than 50% of the lots in the park are occupied by shareholders in the cooperative, and a class rate of 1% if 50% or less of the lots are occupied by the members. This section also includes what was referred to as the Lanesboro provision, which was in a bill of Senator Erickson Ropes. And that's been tightened up a little bit so that it would also require that those properties have to receive a certain amount of their revenues from occupancies of two nights or more. And then there's a third provision at the end of the summary there that deals with the new classification that was enacted last year for marina property. It would expand that or clarify that that is also available if the actual boat ramp is immediately adjacent to the marina property, perhaps not included specifically within it. Sections 24 and 25 and then 26, 28, and 35 are taken from the department's bills. Section 27 is a provision from a bill of Senator Scoy's, and this would essentially set a floor on the levy limit base so that it would not be reduced below 1.17% increase from the previous year's amount. Section 29 and 33 are taken from a bill of Senator Scheid's that would authorize counties to accept property tax payments by electronic means. It also provides that if there are charges for dishonored payments of property taxes, those amounts would be added to the tax and collected along with it. Section 30 is a modified version of Senator Roebling's proposal dealing with separate statements of special taxing district levies. under this version, a separate statement would be required only for those taxing districts whose levies amounted to more than 25% of the total of the special taxing district levies for that taxpayer. Section 31 is a reversion from a change that was made last year in the minimum amount of property tax for which counties may allow or must allow payments in two installments. Last year, that amount was changed from $50 to $250, and this would bring that a levy or that amount back down to a $50 levy level. Sections 34, 32, 34, and 36 were provisions that were in the department's bills. Section 37 is a new provision that's included in another bill that would provide that the payment in lieu of taxes for land that's within the Sudan Underground Mine State Park would be the same level as that for the Lake Vermilion State Park. Section 38 was a provision in the department bill. Sections 39 and 40 are taken from a bill of Senator Ress as amended, providing for a fiscal disparities study with the cost of the study to be taken from the fiscal disparities levy for 1 year.
Questions, members?
You want to talk about that piece, Rob?
Members, on page 111, line 111.7, last year we changed the provision where county auditors, if property taxes were more than $50 due on a parcel, previously people could pay it in two installments. And the counties came in and said that they could save some money if we raised that threshold. It hadn't been raised for a long time. If we raised the threshold, so they suggested $250 and we raised it to $250. Now we're getting a great deal of pushback from some property taxpayers that own multiple parcels. That as a result of this feel that they're being treated unfairly. So I'm not wed to going back to $50. Actually, my own personal county suggested maybe 100 might be a better number than 250. Senator Scoy, any thoughts? I had thought we would just kind of make the 250 permissive if we could, but I'm not sure what happens with the software that goes out to counties, if that has some impact on their computer programming. But Senator Scoy?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think maybe we should continue to work with the counties on this. I thought that we had made a change last year that was going to save some money for them, and I understand they had a little problem with some of the property taxpayers, but I maybe we should continue to work on this and see if there isn't some middle ground between going all the way back to $50. I was a little surprised to see this included in the bill.
Well,
I guess
Senator Scoy, would you like to delete line 111.7 and then kind of visit with the counties a little bit and see if
it looks like it's over on 110.26 also.
Right. Why don't we delete the new language and reinstate the stricken language?
We have to take the section out.
Is it the whole section?
The whole section.
Yeah. Okay, so if we just deleted section 31?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I'll move to delete section 31.
Senator Scoy moves to delete section 31. And then if the counties could have a conversation with Senator Scoy, if there's a better number than 250 or some way to make this permissive and not interfere with computer software, that would, I think some people are making too big a deal out of $250 myself, but then I don't have those multiple parcels that are subjected to this either. But on the Scoy motion to delete section 31. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. Section 31 is deleted. And counties, if you could have a conversation with Senator Skoy before tomorrow. $50, I think, could definitely be adjusted. It's been 20-some years, I think, since that number was moved.
Mr. Chairman, members, Article 5 is the Public Finance and Local Development article. Section 1 is a bill of Senator Skoy's that increases the maximum borrowing authority for watershed districts from $60,000 to $2 million. Section 2 is from a bill of Senator Rest that eliminates the restriction on the creation of economic development districts that are established by an economic development authority. Under current law, those districts have to be created in an area that meets blighting conditions, and this would enable them to do this throughout the city. Section 3 is from a bill of Senator Rest that would allow an authority to increase by up to 10% the amount of its pooling and use that money to develop housing that does not exceed 150% of the average market value of single-family housing, but only if it's located in particular parcels that have either been vacant or blighted or are going into foreclosure. Sections 4 and 5 were taken from the department bill. Section 7 is a new provision that's typically included in the public finance bill, and this would authorize the Metropolitan Council to add to its obligations up to $34,600,000 for capital expenditures in its capital improvement program. Sections 8 and 9 were taken from Senator Pappas's bill that had to do with bond allocation. They authorize a sharing of bonding authority among the Housing Finance Agency, the Office of Higher Education, and the Rural Finance Authority. And they also increase the amount of bond allocations for student loan bonds from the unified pool from $10 million to $25 million each year. Sections 10 to 18 amend a provision that was enacted as part of the jobs bill that would have authorized local governments to issue debt to pay for energy improvement projects in homesteads and other buildings. All of these sections would add the authority. They would allow local governments to designate that its Housing and Redevelopment Authority or Economic Development Authority or a similar kind of entity could be an implementing entity for that program. Section 19 modifies a provision that was also included in the jobs bill that authorizes expenditures within among certain municipalities in the Taconite tax relief area. The amendment to this provision is that the amount that goes to the city of Cook can also be used for the purchase of land. And then if the city sells the land within a period of 10 years, the city must transfer back to the Taconite Environmental Protection Fund the amount that it had been advanced under this provision for that purchase. Section 20 is a bill of Senator Saltzman's that authorized the five-year rule to be extended for 10 years in the city of Landfall Village. Section 21 is a bill of Senator Jungbauer's that had provided special powers to a tax increment district in the city of Ramsey in connection with a transit station district. Section 22 is a provision that had been in a bill of Senator Jen Olson's authorizing special powers for a tax increment financing district in the city of Wayzata. Section 23 is a technical provision that just makes states that the bus bonds apply, that provision applies in the seven county metro area. Section 24 is a revisor's instruction that would make sure that the distribution out of the Taconite tax relief, within the Taconite tax relief area, is codified. Section 25 repeals a separate provision that had been included in the budget cutting bill that dealt with that same topic so that there won't be any conflict between those two. And that's it for that article.
Questions on Article 5?
Article 6.
Mr. Chairman, members, Article 6 is the conditional use deeds provision, which I think people are maybe familiar with. That's been around for two or three years. The department has been working with the cities and counties to make sure that everybody's comfortable with this change in the procedures that are used for dealing with conditional use deeds.
And Senator Moore, I believe these are the this is the language that came out of your committee, the use deed language from last year.
Yes. Article 7 is the miscellaneous article. The Section 1 is a provision from the department bill. Section 2 is a provision that had been in the governor's tax proposal, a bill of Senator Ortman's, that would require the Commissioner of Revenue to charge a $25 fee for entering into payment agreements or modifying those agreements. The amount of the fee will then be adjusted each year so that it would reflect as closely as possible the cost to the commissioner for entering into these agreements. The final section in the bill is an appropriation of $2.8 million to the cash flow account. So the money that remains on the bottom line from this bill would go into the cash flow account.
Any questions, members, on Article 7? Well, thank you, Council. That's it. 149 pages, pretty slim tax bill. We got a little bit out of the way earlier in the jobs bill. So, members, the thought is we'd meet tomorrow and mark the bill up and send it up to the floor. And then I haven't had a conversation with the House yet. This needs to be a House file. So I haven't had a conversation with them yet about when they might send the companion over so that we could take it up in the Senate. But any other questions? Otherwise,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Senja.
I'm sorry if this was discussed when I had some high school students, but in Article 4 in Section 25, the truth in taxation, I'm trying to read through this quickly, through the summary at least. Is there anybody could just explain in a sentence or two how that changes truth in taxation?
Where is it, Senator?
It's Article 4, Section 25, the Truth in Taxation meeting. And I don't need a lengthy, you know, if anybody can just.
Council?
Mr. Chair, Senator Senjum, this is a provision that was actually included, I think, in the revisor's bill last year that did not get enacted at the very last minute. There was some confusion with respect to the application of the requirement that notice be provided that when the budget was going to be discussed at the meetings of the public entities. And there was a concern that there would have to be this process followed for every meeting at which the notice would be discussed or the budget would be discussed. And this is intended to make it clear that there will be a specific meeting at which the levy will be discussed and public input will be allowed.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions, members?
Mr. Chair?
Sir Limmer.
One question that I did have, and sorry I'm a little late today, but on the low-income housing, I think that's a very admirable thing to put into the bill. But I think the last time we had a discussion on this, we raised the option of whether or not private corporations could also take advantage of some of the tax advantages if they build specifically for low-income families. The way this might be interpreted is that we're putting nonprofits in a market advantage over the private sector. And I'm just wondering if anyone has had any discussion regarding that. And if our true goal is to make low-income housing opportunity for as many people as possible, why wouldn't we consider offering that to a private corporation as well? And maybe I could talk to the council and see if there might be something, and then I can bring it up tomorrow as we mark up.
Thank
you. Senator Moore, I think this is your
I think that's a good
proposal.
Point. The question just is kind of what does it cost, I guess. So
yeah,
it would be kind of hard for us to do anything without a fiscal note from the department. But Senator Moore?
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, the my witnesses who were here earlier on the bill could have answered that question, but My thought would be that we wouldn't need to be subsidizing so heavily the nonprofits in doing affordable housing if there are private people who are rushing to do this. And my thinking is that I don't know that from the way that the deals are structured, I think it only makes sense because we had to have so heavily subsidized it that really, I don't know how many private people would be rushing to do the work. The reason why it makes sense is because nonprofits are doing it, and so you limit the liability, you give them access to other, you know, subsidies to make it work.
Mr. Chair, even if the private sector wasn't rushing to do this type of build this type of product, chances are if we did give them an opportunity for some tax savings, maybe the cost of this to the state wouldn't be that much anyway. So maybe it's a rather minimal thing, but it would be a big thing for these few builders that are out there that are trying to, you know, get their business back in light of a bad economy and housing, at least. So we'll kick it around for the next 24 hours and see.
Ms. Cadoon still here? I think any thoughts on could the department do a little work for Senator Limmer? How much low-income housing is being built by the private sector now?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Senator Limmer, we'd have to check with Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. Really would be the, I think, the agency with that should have the detail on how much low-income housing is being built now. And we'll check with them regarding how much is being built for profit versus the nonprofit, which mm-hmm. I think is your question.
Okay.
Senator Limmer, I think I agree with your point. If we think building low-income housing is important, it shouldn't matter who builds it. As to later whether we collect the sales tax or not.
But. Right. Okay.
Any other questions, members? Chair lays over Senate file 3327 as amended, and tomorrow we will plans are to mark it up and move it up to the floor and then take some public testimony on any of the provisions. So those of you that would like to testify have an opportunity to look through, and if you could let us know if you want to testify, let the tax staff know. That would be helpful so we could put a list together. Tomorrow morning, 9 a.m.